city lights looking fine, and I know this is my time now. I'm gonna be myself, or I could be someone else. No one's stopping me now. I'm gonna skip my breaks, I'm gonna make mistakes. I just wanna feel alive. It's just what I do when I'm out, so try not to hold me down. Feel alive when I'm in this town.
Hey, this is Champaign, Illinois native Emily Harrington coming to you from Kitchen Table Studios in the ever-evolving, sometimes boring, flatlands of Champaign-Urbana for the next podcast episode of Hyperlocals, where townies and transplants share their tales of tears and triumphs, losses and wins. So stay tuned to catch the characters behind the beloved Twin Cities of CU.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of the Hyperlocals podcast. We have an extra person in the room. We have Brett Shaws. I'm going to call him public relations, but that's not his title. And that is who my dog is barking at. He will calm down, as everyone knows from the video. So just be patient, okay? Brett Shaw, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I told you that I was going to start by asking you why, when I first asked you about 6 months or so ago, you said you were interested and then it kind of passed. So I just want to talk about what changed your mind, or if it was just simply logistics.
Yeah. So I think people who know my past and know my story would maybe say that was the reason. Like, you're scared to come on here and get deep and talk about some, you know, rough moments of your life. But that's not really it. It was more of just like a, I'm not huge in the podcast. I've never really experienced them and listened to a ton, just because I'm so based off music. So I didn't know what this entailed. And it was just more just like diving in and trying it out.
Okay, so you did end up listening to the pod. And what did you think?
Incredible. The way you... I listened to yours. And now the last couple of days of just driving around town, I've just been listening to all the different ones. Trenton, them, Tony, Callie, Dan, all of them. And I'm like, the way you direct it, the way it is, amazing. People come in here and get super vulnerable. It's awesome.
Well, I hope you still feel like that after we are complete today.
100%.
But I really appreciate you being here. I've already learned an incredible amount about you. And I'm excited because you gave me the... what I would call the fast forward version. Yep. So we'll kind of break it down.
Absolutely.
Because I didn't even know that you were from Champaign.
Yep.
Southwest Champaign is where you grew up.
Yep. Farm kid. Grew up a farm kid.
What does that mean for elementary, middle school, high school?
Well, kind of wild, because I lived in Southwest Champaign and I went to Garden Hills. I was one of few white kids growing up. I mean, yeah, that's so completely out of my element. So.
Oh, that is funny.
So you, right off the bat, you got to kind of experience a whole different side of life.
Yeah, well, that might have...
Which, I love it. I'm all about the diversity. Yeah.
And that might make you the person you are today in terms of talking to people, getting to know people.
Yeah.
So where is middle school?
Then I did Jefferson, so I lost all my friends.
All my
group went to Edison Central. I did Jefferson Centennial.
Okay.
So I kind of just had to restart. But when you're a kid...
Yeah.
Like, high school could be tough, but middle school...
What kind of kid were you in elementary and middle school?
I was a little saint.
Were you?
I was a little angel. Grew up Catholic. Yeah, farm kid. Just, yeah, manners, polite, you know. Oh, yeah, Catholic little kid growing up.
And then what happens? You said your life kind of pivoted at 15.
Yeah, 15, life-changing. That's when, rough year, I lost my mother. She was my everything. I have two older brothers. I was a baby. Me and her were super close.
Oh, okay.
So that was the big pivotal moment. A lot of stuff went down that year.
Were your parents together at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, for the most part, normal, typical childhood.
Yep.
Happy parents together.
Yep.
And your mom passes away tragically, suddenly?
Brain cancer.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I remember when she picked me up from the school and she was crying and she was just like... And she worked with special ed kids, and she normally worked at the school I was at, because the kid that she worked with was my age, so kind of followed me around, and she was just crying, and she's like, I'm losing it.
Mm.
I'm forgetting how to do day-to-day things, so.
So she was just telling you a problem she was having.
Yep.
And then she went to the doctor to discover what the problem was from?
Yep, they went down to Barnes in St. Louis and found out that she had three massive brain tumors.
Oh my God.
She was pregnant with me, she had melanoma in her leg.
Okay.
They took a chunk out. then what was it, when I was 13, a little one in her breast, they took that out, and then 15 was the brain.
So bad luck.
Yeah.
Is an understatement.
Seriously. Yeah.
And from that time she was crying to you in school, how long till she passed?
Exactly 7 months.
Wow, so really fast.
Really fast. And it was quite the journey. Yeah. Even 5 months in, when she was having seizures because it was getting pretty bad, I was working for Ramshaw Real Estate, my family, because every summer you're working. And I remember, like, my dad was a fire chief. I wanted to be a firefighter. I come up on this terrible scene after work in the summer, and I see the worst accident I've ever seen in my life. A semi truck hits a car, and it's my own parents in that car that got hit. And my dad's covered in blood, unconscious. My mom's out in a ditch. The car's on fire. And she was having a seizure. They were rushing her to the hospital in a semi.
No way.
So here I am, like this 15-year-old kid, innocent. Now I'm taking out of high school to literally run the farm because my brothers were out of the house by then. So now I'm like, I'm taking care of my mom. I'm taking care of my dad. My mom can't talk. They barely can move. So
your dad was rushing your mom, who had brain cancer, was having a seizure, to the hospital. They get hit.
Yep.
Your dad is injured.
Yep. Oh, yeah. They're both really bad injured. A drunk driver. He was drunk.
No way.
Yep. Driving a semi right there at Rising in Springfield. And I was the first one on the scene. So traumatizing.
More bad luck.
More bad luck.
And at that point, your childhood ends.
Yes.
You are now running things.
Yes. And then it was like, it's hard to even relate with like kids my age because I had to mature and grow up so quick.
So you're this innocent, sweet boy. Now life has thrown you an immense amount of problems. Is that where addiction forms, or is it something you were born with?
No. Even then, I kept my head on straight. And,
okay.
And I don't know if it was having good teachers and counselors at Centennial that really helped me keep my head on straight to finish through. But like, I stayed good and finished through high school and kept my head on straight. Didn't go to any alcohol, or wasn't one of these young high school, you know, some kids start early, and I didn't. So I made it through. I think it was then getting out of the house, never healing, and bad coping mechanisms start once I get out of the house.
So this was not something genetic for you?
Nope.
Which most commonly, and a lot of people I've had on, that it's always genetic.
Always. And I always talk to them, as I've learned a lot as I got older, is like, where did this root from? Like, who in our family? Yeah. And my father's like, you are so black sheep.
Wow.
There's no addictive personalities. There's no alcoholism. There's no substance. My mother never drank, smoked, nothing. My dad, maybe a beer here and there, but never saw him drunk or nothing. My brothers kept their head on straight. So yeah. And even generations up, nothing. So.
So you're now having to run the farm, which is another thing that probably helped you be who you are today in terms of business, don't you think?
100%. Just action over excuses.
Yeah.
All you know is just like, I have to provide, get stuff done.
So your dad is recovering. Your mom's now passed away. I imagine this was hard on your dad as well.
Yep.
So
very hard.
And your brothers are out of the house.
Yes. And I'll say it. My dad, and he's a big old boy and he's tough. So the upbringing, he was your worker that provides for the family.
Mm.
And he was the punisher when he had to punish. So like, my mom was the one who really was the love. So like, when she passed and it's me and him in the house, I wasn't the closest with him, you know, growing up. So like, we're in the house living together.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. So it was two people both really hurting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've lost the affection component.
Yep.
The gentle touch.
Yep.
And now it's just full on.
Yeah.
Your dad is a farmer.
Yep. He was a farmer and a fire chief.
Okay. So you're having to take over like his business or help with, how do you do that?
He had hired men with the farming operation, with the, you know, the farming of the corn and the beans.
Oh my gosh.
And then by that point we already had like all the livestock and animals were gone. So it was more really just like helping around the house ish. I didn't really have to do a lot of the farm responsibilities, some stuff, but we grew up doing that. So it was nothing new.
Did you ever talk to each other?
Me and him?
Yeah. About the loss of your mom, his wife.
Later on.
Yeah.
When it first happened, I mean, like my junior and senior year in high school, I didn't even go out on the weekends because even though I wasn't so close with him, I could not leave watching him sit in his chair by himself. Like, it was just two people that were literally as empty as it gets sitting in a house together. I'm living in the basement. He's upstairs. I'd come up to get food. And it's just like, oh, man.
So you didn't want to leave him alone.
Yeah, yeah.
So even though you weren't best buddies and getting along.
Yeah, yeah.
You still felt sympathy for him.
100%.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right, so you graduate high school relatively unscathed in terms of your behavior.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
College?
College was, yeah.
Where did you end up going? Did you apply a lot of places?
No, I did. Oh, just a hot mess. I did Parkland. Didn't have any idea what I wanted to do. The counselor there told me to take all these courses that weren't even transferable.
Oh, God.
Failed out like second semester in.
But that's not on brand for you because you're a motivated, full-on guy.
The one thing in life that I have given my everything to and barely can get through is school.
Really?
And I use that a lot. Like, that's my business motivation right now is like, when I give something my all, I will crush it. School, I could not do that.
Why do you think that is? Too boring?
ADHD. I need to move and groove. I need hands-on. Yeah. I need action. I can't sit there and listen to blah, blah, blah. I think my mind just knows bullshit. And it's like, if this is not going to help me, done.
You don't want your time going to it.
So like, I failed out of Parkland. Took a couple years off. My dumb ass applies to Kansas University. And they send me back like a letter like, no. And it's like, you have nothing to show. You failed out of a JUCO. I literally drive to Kansas.
No.
And I meet with someone face to face. I get a packet that says you've been accepted.
No. But this is the enigma of your life. I feel like some things you touch turn to gold.
Oh my gosh.
And you use your personality as your weapon, your superpower.
Amen.
So you got in.
There's like a fight, like a fight or flight. When it kicks in, it's like, if I want this, I'm getting it.
You drove to the university, you talked face to face, and you talked yourself into it.
Left at midnight, got there 6 a.m.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, last second, just because I was like, I got that decline. I'm like, not happening.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just such a big believer of like face to face, like let people see. I don't want to write a letter about why I should be in. So I just went there, walked into admissions, met with some guy, shared my story, and I just fought, like, give me a chance.
You don't have the grades, you don't have the extracurriculars.
Nothing. Hilarious looking back. They're probably like, what's wrong with this kid?
And you walk out with an acceptance from Kansas.
Yes.
Why Kansas?
I had friends there at the time.
Okay.
I grew up here. I played tennis with in high school. I went there a couple times. I liked university. Gave me a fresh start.
Okay.
Get on your own.
Yeah.
You know, I think this was when I was in a healthier spot because my life, there was ups and downs.
Sure.
I'm in an up right now.
Okay.
So I went, got my own 2-bedroom, tried to give school a chance again.
Was it hard to say goodbye to your dad then? Leaving him behind then? Or had he put some healing behind?
At that time, no, because I never, like, me and him had not really healed from, like, the trauma and whatnot. And I was just kind of like, my story's lone wolf. I've always just kind of thought lone wolf. So a lot of my life, I've been on my own.
Okay.
Yep.
What is college like?
I actually went there, and surprisingly, like, you would have thought, like, I went there and party, but I lived alone, just Adderall, library. Almost like my business now. Like, I was putting in 90 hours a week in the library, just overnighters in the library. And I would call my father after, because in college it's based on exams.
Sure.
And I would get C's and D's on my exams, even though I literally was in the library more than any damn kid in that university. And I would call him, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I'd give it my all, and I could not do good at it.
Okay.
And I think that's where, like, the spark in me came with my business. It was like, watch me. Like, if I'm seeing these kids and these people who, whatever, no study, no nothing, walk in AB, I'm like, I'm living this just a nerd life for a whole year and getting C's and D's.
Do you have ADHD?
Terribly.
Do you have dyslexia?
No.
But you were giving it your all, and it was just not panning out.
Yep. Something about, don't give me a book, don't put me in a classroom.
Yeah.
Let me go out and freestyle it. Let me meet people.
Yeah.
Let me grind. Like, don't.
Yeah.
It's just not my jam at all.
Did you end up failing out? Did you leave college?
No, I left.
Oh, you did?
I didn't fail out. I got by with like C's, but that one year, and I was just done.
Really? Just, yep. You knew it wasn't for you.
Yep. And then I went on the run, and then I just went wild.
It was probably frustrating though when you give it your all.
Very.
And the returns didn't come in.
Very. Like, I still this day passionately don't like the school systems. Like, if I were to have a kid right now,
yeah,
like, my kid would be like, you're going to learn from daddy. I'm going to teach you life. Common sense, street smarts, how to hustle, how to grind, how to love people, how to win.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. Like, did school ever teach me about credit? No. So like building my company, I had to start from the ground up with nothing and little by little by little build. It's like there's a lot of important components that school just never taught.
Sure.
So, yeah. Still to this day, I got anger towards school.
Maybe in your next life, you should become a teacher, like a business teacher. You know what I mean?
I'd pass on that. A mentor or motive, you know, to help somebody, I'm all for it.
But, yeah, but not in the classroom. Okay. Yeah,
no.
Okay, so this next year, your life really changes.
Yep.
Okay, what happens? What ignites the fire of the downhill?
So where it changes then is now I'm out of school again.
Yeah.
And I'm angry because I tried this time.
Yes.
And I still couldn't really do good. And the mix of a good kid that never has healed yet from losing his mother,
mm-hmm.
that chose bad people and bad things for coping mechanisms to try to find myself mm-hmm. when I was low.
Yeah.
And I chose all the wrong things.
Okay. So we're at a low.
We're at a low.
Are we back in Champaign?
No.
Okay.
I still wasn't really close with my father, and I didn't want to come back here. It's when I really went lone wolf and I went out to California, Humboldt, California, Eugene, Colorado, all of that.
How are you funding these travels?
So, if I go backwards a little bit, obviously, so 21, I started my painting business.
Oh.
But I didn't have my head on straight.
Okay. Was it what it's called today?
It was Shaw's Premier Painting.
Okay.
And I built it up decent. And I landed a good account at Colbert Park in Savoy.
Okay.
And it was a turnover painting. The kids move out for 2 weeks. You go in.
You slap a fresh coat of white. Yes.
Exactly. And they paid me $30,000. Well, you know, you give a dumb kid with their head not on straight $30,000. And me thinking business, entrepreneur, I knew hippies, you know, across the country in Oregon. And I was like, wait a second. Like, I could take this $30,000 and make it 100 overnight. So me being young and dumb, that's what I did. I packed up my vehicle and I drove to Oregon. So it kind of started with one business transaction.
Wow.
Led to funding and building a side business.
Okay. And this, what is the side business?
Just selling marijuana.
Okay.
And I didn't get into it yet, but you know, 18 years old when I was here at Parkland,
uh-huh.
living on campus.
Okay.
I was, you know, weed was what I went to when I lost my mother.
Oh.
It just kept me, I didn't have to feel.
Okay.
Weed would help me not feel the pain of losing my mother. So weed was my battle for like 20 years of my life.
Okay.
When I was at Parkland at 18, 19 years old, living on campus, I had to start selling it to support my addiction.
Morning, noon, and night?
Yes.
You were smoking it?
Yes.
You were always stoned?
Oh. Wake up, roll up as much as you could. Start, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And just a little, we're just numbing.
Yep. My buddies in California send me a package every morning. I'd come to my house every day. And it would just be like my personal. But then obviously as a kid, I got money from when my mom passed. I blew right through that money. Now I have to start selling it to support my smoking.
When these packages are coming to your door, are they like pre-rolled? Are they baggies?
No, it's just vacuum sealed. Yeah, right through USPS. Just
coming. Unreal. Daily.
Daily.
Did your dad know what was going on?
No one. I wasn't. Any time in life I was living kind of rough, my family would know, because normally an addict or someone battling, you take your close people out of your life when you're going through.
Okay.
So they would always know when I was on or off because communication with my family.
Wow.
So that's just me hanging with my college friends, just living. Yeah.
Okay. So you go to Oregon, right?
Yep. So.
And then you're keep doubling your money.
Yep. So now, we're up to where I was. This is when I'm, 21, 22.
Okay.
After the whole, you know, thing here, mm-hmm. the first time. But yeah, I mean, I did a $30,000 at that Colbert Park, drove to Oregon, 46-hour drive by myself.
Oh, my God.
I was on the world's biggest weed farm. Had no idea what to expect. I didn't know I was going to the world's biggest weed farm. They held me hostage for 2 weeks. Rastafarians with AKs in my head every day, every night, to make sure I wasn't police, because this is like a serious operation. And I'm like the only non-hippie out there, and they're making sure things are legit. So I have to live in a tent for 2 weeks on this weed farm. And here I am, this innocent kid, just like bawling my eyes out, gunshots. I mean, all types of madness. I'm like, is this where I die? Like, is this the end of my journey?
What are you physically doing there? You are picking weed?
Well, the funniest thing ever is like, before they would let me get my $30,000 worth of weed to go back home, they made me work for them.
No.
So they have me like trimming weed, like, trimming flower with all these like hippie kids that are more like peace and love, smoking a little bit, trimming it. And here I am, just go hard little kid, like goody kid. I'm trimming like 4 pounds a day. And they were like, no one has ever came on this farm and trimmed this much.
Which doesn't surprise me. That is, yeah, that does not surprise me. You did it, and you did it to the best capacity.
Yes.
And while you're doing it, they have guns pointed at you because they are trying to make sure you're not a bad guy.
Yeah, so like literally I would be sitting in a chair trimming it, and like this Rastafarian guy who was like, he was the one who watched me every day, and he would literally take his AK and just tap the back of my head once in a while just to kind of like scare me.
And it's like the movies.
It's, yeah, it was, yeah. I'm like, this is crazy.
Okay. And in 2 weeks, you earn your keep.
Yep.
And earn their trust.
Yep. And they take me in their RV and they get me my package and vacuum it all up. And they give me like this pitch that's like, if you get caught, we will find you and we will end you. Like they, this whole thing, and like tell me the story and like have me tell my story as to if I get pulled over, what I'll say.
Wow.
Like they basically put me through an interview to make sure like, okay, we trust him. He's good. You can leave here with this.
And then you go back where? To sell it.
Then I drive 46 hours right back here, dish it right away. And
to Champaign?
Yep.
Okay.
That's in Champaign.
So is that the U of I campus?
Yep.
Okay.
So that's my first run. Did that literally in a week. And that 30 grand is now like $105,000.
Okay. So now we've almost tripled. And what do we do with that 105?
Turn right back around.
And go to the same place?
And drive to the same place.
And now they trust you.
Yep.
They think you're good at what you're doing.
Yep.
So no gun to your head at this point.
No, nothing. This one was just more get it. Spend a couple days there too, because they're like, you did not just drive 46 hours straight without stopping. I'm like, I did. They're like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know.
So you didn't stop?
Didn't stop.
You didn't sleep?
Didn't sleep. I got there and they pulled me out of the car. I was hallucinating.
No.
Just out of my mind.
Okay. And the idea behind that concept is just you want to do it the fastest, most efficient way.
I've never known slow. All I know is 110.
Oh my God. And then where do you go? You come back?
I come back again.
Okay.
And that 100 grand now is over half a million.
Oh my God.
That was about 2-3 weeks. So I mean, we're like, what, just over a month in, and my 30 grand is now over half a million cash.
Mm.
And I'm this lost clown, 24-year-old kid.
On the U of I, our area, Champaign.
Yep.
In terms of the actual process, are you knocking on doors? Is one person say, here's the phone? Like, how does it circulate?
No, it actually, because of when I was 18, I did it on a smaller scale on U of I's campus.
Uh-huh.
I was selling to every single frat and sorority and a million people. I'm a smart guy and I come from a good family. I'm not some clown doing this. So when I did it this time, it was a different Brett with a more business mind. Less transactions, bigger amounts, you win. And even above that, it was find people that you know and trust, that have people that know who smoke, front it out. So the second your vehicle lands in Champaign, you have all of that off your hands and you have nothing to do but go party, live your life, and just collect.
Wow. So they were doing the manual labor, yep, other people.
I was literally just the guy back. Yeah, I took the funds, I invested it, I'd come back and I would drop it off. And that was like my second run. Then I did, you know, more runs and then spread out, and you just keep, you have your people.
It just, the money kept multiplying.
Yes.
Okay, does this go south?
It does go south. Because like everything, there needs to be a stopping point, but when are you going to stop?
Do you remember the peak of your income during those runs?
My last run, between the house in Oregon, the condo in Denver, and my place here, I had $4.3 million in cash.
In cash.
In cash.
In dollar bills.
In dollar bills.
Is your dad ever say, wow, your car's, that's a really nice car. Or how are you? Does he ever question what is going on?
No, because I wasn't even, none of my family was in my life at this time.
Okay. This was the isolation.
Isolation.
Okay.
And they're like, we've lost bread again.
Wow. He'll
but come. They didn't know how bad.
Okay. And you're still smoking weed, but that's really your only vice?
Yeah. At this time, I'm smoking it and drinking and going, you know, drinking and going out to the bars, but nothing crazy.
Okay. The bottom has to fall out on this operation.
Yeah.
Okay. So when does that happen?
I had a place in Oregon, but I also had...
Oh, you bought a place there.
I didn't buy a place. The hippie group, they started loving me so much and trusting me so much because they're all kind of rough-looking hippie people. I'm this clean-cut business-type guy. So they started, like, using me. So I'm doing my own stuff, but they're also like having me like send and sell weed for them and paying me thousands just to help them out. Cause they found out like this dude's really good at what he does.
Oh,
so
my
they,
gosh.
They put me in a grow op house. So they had like this house that they turned into an indoor grow op, and they let me just kind of manage the house and live in the house.
This is unreal.
Yeah,
and it is unreal.
And I'm like, what just happened? Like, yeah, what started with like a paint job to make a little bit extra.
Yeah.
Took me down to, yeah.
Okay. The bottom falls out.
Yes.
Are the cops smelling what's going on in the community?
Yep. Long story short, I had 8 people that I would front my weed to.
Okay.
University of Bradley, Illinois State, Eastern, U of I, Kansas. I had 8 universities I was running, and I had a person at each university that I would drop off to.
What's the amount you're dropping off?
Depends. Like Bradley, I had a guy who ran the entire Bradley. I'd drop off 80 pounds.
What does 80 pounds look like in my hands or on this table?
Before I left, I was the one who packaged it up. So I would triple vacuum seal every pound to like little bricks.
Okay.
So it's like basically 80 bricks. So 80 pounds would be like 2 suitcases.
Unbelievable.
I would drive home. Yeah. And my whole trunk was just 10 suitcases.
Your back was probably so heavy of that car.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So 80 pounds just to that university. Just to Bradley?
Just to Bradley. So okay. I would drive all the way from Oregon back here. And right when I got into town, it would be like a stop at Bradley, drop it off. Stop at Bloomington, drop it off. Go down to Eastern, drop it off. Obviously, I'd hit Kansas first because that was the first stop. But
okay.
Yeah, that way when I got to my place, which I was living at Colbert Park in Savoy.
Oh, just my
a little,
God.
Just a little apartment. I was done. It's like, you just made it. You're done.
Phew.
Yep.
And then did you sleep for a few days?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. So you did rest for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Once I got here after those, it's just like kick
God.
Back.
Okay.
Yeah. Live like a little rock star.
Okay. But the police are on your tail a little bit.
Yeah. One of the guys got caught. And that's what happened. The guy Bradley got popped.
Okay.
And he snitched, which put them on to me. And what I learned, a whole different lesson was the DEA can only arrest you like on what day. Like, they have to catch you. The FBI can arrest you on evidence.
Okay.
And I, long story short, I was, at this point, one of the most wanted in the whole area by the FBI. And when I say my raid was massive, it was over 10 different agencies that raided me.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you know that Bradley guy where he is today?
I think he's up near the Moline area where he's from. He was also a farm kid.
Do you hold resentment to him?
Zero.
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 Back then... Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you were
pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm a very happy, like, there's not anger in me, and I'm very quick to forgive and forget.
Yeah. But he broke up this perfect...
He ruined everything.
...operation.
Everything.
And if he hadn't, maybe your life would be different today.
Yes.
Or it would have eventually, someone else would have got busted.
Yep. I mean, yeah, we were so big at that point.
Oh, my God.
It's a matter of time. Yeah.
The Bradley guy snitches... So now there's a raid.
Yep.
Okay. What does that look like?
Well, it was like the first time I was catching up with my brother. So, which was terrible. He comes to my house. I hadn't seen none of my family forever.
Oh my God.
And the one time my innocent, sweet brother comes to check in on me, we're sitting there. It's like a Sunday night at 7 p.m.
In Colbert apartment?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then just, yeah. I don't even know. 40 minivans pull up and... Yeah, so he was in on it, and I mean, it was FBI, DEA, every single police agency, every state police, it was every single agency, period, that did it, and he actually knew a couple of the guys from hunting and whatnot, but yeah, it's terrible, because I might have did this, but I'm not a monster.
Yeah.
None of this was like, even the FBI agent looked at me, and he was like, how are you sleeping at night? I'm like, I have zero stress. I don't look at this like a bad thing. I was literally treating this like a business, and I'm dealing with high-end, clean people. I didn't think anything was...
You're not malicious. You don't have a gun. You're not like... Yeah.
He's like, when you were driving across country with this much, knowing that this is life in prison, what's in your trunk? How... And I'm like, oh, I had classic rock on, dude. I'm just vibing out.
Oh, my God. Did your brother get in trouble at all?
Zero.
Okay, he was not implicated
in
this.
No, because I instantly... It's me.
Okay,
I took all the blame.
Okay.
Yeah, I would never.
And you're like, shit, busted. You go to jail.
Yep.
And then what happens in jail?
I didn't really cooperate. They didn't want me in jail. They knew because they've been watching me. When they took me in the FBI interrogation room, this dude pulls out, when I say literally, probably 1,000 sheets of paper. 1,000 sheets. And I was like, can I just ask when we start this, like, what that is? And he's like, I'll show you one piece. And he flips over one. It's like my vehicle in Idaho.
No.
And he was like, just so you know, this is 1,000 pictures of your dumbass that we've been following. And I was like, oh no. And then he made it clear, FBI can charge on evidence. So he's like, this right here is your life. And I was like, oh.
When you were vibing out on rock back and forth cross country,
yeah,
did you ever think of the repercussions?
I didn't think repercussions.
Okay.
But I can tell you, like, the first couple trips I made, I told you I drove straight through like an idiot.
Yeah.
The last few, I would slow down. I'd stop at hotels, place off the grid. And I remember, like, there'd be times, Friday night, I'm 24, all my friends are out partying, having a good time. I'm in bum F nowhere, Idaho, off the grid at a military place in a motel by myself with a whole room full of marijuana, and I'm trapped. Like, I can't go back. I can't do it. And I feel the pain of losing my mother. I'm empty. I'm isolated. I'm so deep in this journey. Mm-hmm. I can't get out. So, I mean, I had some deep, 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 deep moments that people would never, you know. So it wasn't all roses like people thought.
Okay. But you never thought about getting the police?
Zero.
No.
Not even a thought. Even my family, like my cousins here, they're like, how were you not shitting yourself?
I'm yeah.
I didn't even think that.
Wow.
It was just a drive there, a drive back, get it away, live your life. Like, it, I thought I had it ran pretty smooth.
Wow. It's interesting that you can compartmentalize it like that.
Yeah.
But at night, you still felt the pain of what you were going through.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So now we're in trouble.
Yep.
They've got evidence.
Yep.
You can't talk your way out of it.
Nope.
But I'll let you go if you tell me where you got it.
Yep.
Is that what happens?
Yep.
And you say no.
I didn't snitch. And then what it came down to was they knew I was owed some serious money from Kansas and other universities. And they wanted to sit in my place while the money was brought to me and me give it to them and me being a dumbass.
Like a sting operation.
Yep.
Okay.
They weren't going to do nothing. I made sure, like, I asked them 100 times. I'm like, I'm the only one that takes a hit for this.
Okay.
Like, right? And they were cooperative. And they're like, no one involved in this is going to, a word, nothing will happen. I'm like, okay. Because that's how I am. I love my people.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's like, if I'm doing this, I take the hit, period.
Sure.
But I was greedy. So when the money came in, I would take my roommate's phone, call my boy's roommate, so it's roommate to roommate talking to different phones.
Okay.
About when you come, put this much money in a bag and this much, and I would tell the FBI fake amounts, and they caught me up. So then they were like, now you're going away, and you're going away for 50 to 60 years. So they put me in county, and then they started like the whole, yeah.
And this made the local newspaper?
This one did.
Okay.
Yep.
What's your dad say?
Everyone's just shocked. Like,
oh, they are.
Because they didn't know what I was up to. Nothing. Because
okay.
I had not talked to them about anything.
This was a surprise for them.
Yeah. And I come from a great family. So they're like,
oh,
what?
My God.
They're like, what's, this can't be real life. And not only that, they put it on the news every day for like 7 days. So.
Oh, my God.
And my father, you know, I come from great parents. So well known in the community, a fire chief, farmer, good person. So
it's embarrassing.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely embarrassing.
Did you feel bad?
Terrible.
You did.
Terrible.
Okay. So you're feeling empathy, you're feeling sympathy, you're feeling sadness.
Oh, yeah. Because I never want to ever, my whole life, I've never wanted to harm people.
Yeah.
In my whole past, I always harm myself.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this sucked.
Okay. So do you get out? Do you get off? What is your punishment?
So the punishment basically was you get those 3 plea offers.
Okay.
And this is all new to me. I'm like this innocent kid in there. Now I'm learning how to like work the jail system.
Oh,
to like,
my God.
It's so messed up. But it's like the first one was like 63 years.
Mm.
I'm like, I can't go away. This is the first offense. Like, I'm a good kid. I meant no harm. I can't. Then the next one was 57 years. I'm like, no, I can't. And the final plea offer was 53 years to Colorado, to a federal prison. They had me pack my bag. I literally had like an 8-hour cry session jail, called my dad, said my goodbyes to my family, like kind of came to peace to this. Long story short that we don't really get into, my dad's best friend is one of the biggest defense lawyers in the state of Illinois in Chicago. And he came down last second at the end and pulled some strings in the courtroom. He's a 6'8", very alpha. He defends murderers. He doesn't really know how to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So that played a huge role. But what happened was, instead of serving that 53-year sentence, in jail, once 5 p.m. hits, no one's coming in there. You're not having any investigators, no lawyers, no one's coming to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that lawyer came in and talked to some people to help me out a bit, but the FBI agents came in at 7 p.m. the night I had my bags packed to get in the white van at 2 in the morning to go to Denver. And he took me into a room in a jail. And he's like, young man, we've listened to every phone call you've made in jail. You have the best head on your shoulders of anyone we've ever seen.
Wow.
And he was like, I know your dad better than your dad knows himself.
Mm.
He's like, I've researched and looked into every single thing of your family, everyone. He's like, and they basically said, like, get your shit together. Instead of going away in a white van, you're getting a 2-year probation sentence.
No way.
And a big fine. And that's what happened. So it was just like, and basically what the FBI agent told me, now it's actually wild. Now we're actually friends. The FBI agent actually came and watched the national championship game at the farm with me and my dad the next year.
Wow.
Because I think he got to know, like, I'm not a...
Yeah.
So we're close. And he told me, he was like, Brett, what we did to you was a 100% scare tactic.
Oh.
He's like, we never even had an intent to put you away or send you off. But because you didn't cooperate, we just wanted to scare the life out of you.
Hmm.
And I was like, well, it worked. Good job.
Did it shake you out of that lifestyle?
Yes.
Okay. So you took that message.
Yep.
And you never sold again.
Nope. And Jim Kogut, the lawyer, is a man I've always looked up to the most of any human. He's just a big alpha, unintimidating stud dude. And I come from hard knocks, so I like someone who's hard on you. I don't like soft.
Sure.
And he looked at me in jail when he came in those last couple of days and he said, get your effing head out of your effing ass. He's like, you have so much potential if you just focus things to the right.
Mm-hmm.
That has stuck with me forever.
Mm.
So like when the whole process of building my own business, like I just always think of that.
Do you still communicate with him?
Oh yeah.
Do you feel like you owe him?
Everything.
Yeah. Painting, if nothing else.
We've done a few of those.
Okay, good. I want to know what the fine was. Can you tell me?
Yeah, it was $20,000.
Do you lose all of the income that you made in those?
I had to tell them. So the newspaper was hilarious. Like when I was sitting in jail and I watched the news and they're like, we got him in Champaign, $80,000 cash, a couple pounds. When they raided me, that's all I had was $80,000 cash in there. But what they didn't talk about at all was the second they raided me, the next day the FBI flew to Oregon and took over the $4.3 million and everything. So they, interesting to me how they kept all that hidden. I mean,
wow.
it didn't hurt me any. It helped me out because it doesn't make me look this crazy psycho. But I'm sitting there just laughing like, what a lie. Like, unbelievable.
So by and large, you lost that income.
Yeah, I lost it all.
Oh, God.
Which everyone's like, why didn't you hide it? Why didn't you bury it? I'm like, I wasn't even thinking.
You weren't thinking about what could go wrong.
Yeah.
You really weren't.
Yeah.
You were kind of enjoying just the process.
It was a different life. 24 years old, going out to the bars just with your friends every night of the week. I was paying my roommates and giving them jobs. So like one of my roommates' job was to wake up and roll me 28 joints every day. And I'd give him $1,000 cash.
No.
And he's 22? He's getting $1,000 cash a day just to roll me an ounce of joints. That was his job.
No way.
So I look back, it's like, I don't regret my past. Like it made me who I am. During the moment, it was epic.
Wow. Okay, how do we recover from this?
So I get out, start all over.
Mm-hmm. You've been given a second chance.
Yep. Get back to the farm, make amends with my father, you know, come clean, kind of chill out, kind of hide for a second because I'm embarrassed. I think I kind of was like battling, like, how do I get out of this?
How do I come back in the community?
And it was simple. Like some counselors and my father was like, you got to get your head, you got to get up, get going.
Mm.
Like you got to face it now. So over time, I just kind of got back in and went back to work.
Okay.
Because I told you the business was up and down when I wasn't doing dumb shit. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So at some point you said you were working with an employee and he introduced something in your life that sent you plummeting again.
Yep. This incident happened. I move home, get back on my feet, start busting my ass. All I know is one speed. That's 110. So I build the business up. Next thing you know, 2 years later, I'm 24 years old. I have 50 employees. And we're
you Shaw Lux yet?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. This was 24 years old. So I'm still just Shakespeare painting, but we're slinging out 700 paint jobs a year, which is absurd.
And are you physically picking up a paintbrush at this time still?
At this time, no.
You've moved on.
Yes.
Okay.
I've done all that. I mean, yeah, from 12 to 20, I was doing all the hands-on. But at this point, no, I have 50 guys doing all my work, and I'm just selling like a mother effort to keep work for 50 people.
Unbelievable.
So I'm just going, going, going. So I built it up, and then I'm a good energy guy. It was payroll. I have all 50 people over to my place. I go buy unlimited beer just so the guys are happy and they're taken care of. We bust their ass. We're working 100-hour work weeks. And yeah, he puts cocaine down and I snort one line of it. And
for the first time in your life.
I've done it before in college, but college, I don't know what. I do it. I'm like, it makes me awkward and too amped up. No, like I didn't want nothing to do with it. This time I did it one time. And I was, when I say I did it that one time, I had to have it in my life. Every second.
Unbelievable.
So now here I am again. A couple years of keep my head on straight, building a business good, on track to build this amazing empire, and another slip up starts.
Okay. And the slip up leads to what?
Substance abuse.
Okay.
This one is not anything selling. This is, I did that substance and now I have a dealer who is literally basically living with me, following me everywhere I go, an ounce a day of cocaine. Party scene, clubs all over the world. I mean, just, yeah.
How's the business doing at this time?
This whole substance abuse journey only lasted 6 months because I'm so extreme that it just amped up. But the first couple months, I was still managing clients and jobs and going to bids and meeting with people. Then it just got out of hand.
Mm.
The club life and the nightlife and the substance got so bad. Next thing you know, I'm isolating.
Okay.
And it just gets worse and worse.
Does anyone know what's going on or that communication just stops?
The close people in my life know.
Okay.
Again, I cut my family out.
Yeah.
The first thing. So my brothers and my father don't have a clue. That was always like the first thing. They always joke now. They're like, we always knew when you were a hot mess because we were gone to you.
Wow.
My workers knew. They were the first ones to know.
Okay.
Because they're like, this guy who was just Mr. Workaholic on it is starting to lose his mind a bit.
Yeah.
He's starting to get edgy. He was not really an edgy guy.
Yeah.
He's just kind of showing signs that something's not right.
Were they able to keep things afloat without you?
They were for a while.
Okay.
And then I lost everything a few months in.
Shut
up. So 50 guys that were counting on me and I ruined the whole operation because I lost my mind.
Okay, so the business falls out. And that's the end of Premier.
Yep, done.
Done.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you let customers down?
Yep.
And the employees?
Yep. Only at that point, we made it through most of them until, and I didn't really have much lined up. There were a couple people in the community that I let down.
Mm. Did you make amends on that?
Yep.
You did?
Yep.
Okay, so how does this come to a head in terms of recovery? Because there is a happy ending.
Yeah, so with this then, basically after some overdoses and just some darkness and all the close people in my life leaving me, my cousin finds me overdosed, damn near dead on my couch. Gets me back to life, drives me up on
Christmas Day.
Yeah, I was supposed to be at a family event.
And you didn't show, so they knew something was wrong.
Yeah, and you don't miss a family Christmas.
Yeah. Okay.
And they found me, on my couch, unresponsive.
So ambulance?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And they're able to revive you?
Yep.
And he takes you to Hazleton?
Yes.
In Minnesota?
Yep. So New Year's Eve, he looks at me and he goes, are we done yet?
Mm.
And I said, do whatever you want to me.
Really?
In life, there's a rock bottom. There's a point like you have to be sick and tired.
Yeah.
And it's just, I was so done and exhausted. When he looked at me and said that, I said, do whatever you want.
Mm.
And addicts in recovery understand when someone's at that point, you have to act now because 10 seconds later, he could say, don't you dare.
Yeah, sure.
So God bless him. He got in the whip right there and took his New Year's Eve and sacrificed it and drove me all the way up 7 hours to Minnesota.
Okay. And that place changed your life?
Changed my life. Crazy.
Really?
And there's some stories in there, too. I mean, yeah, it changed my life. It's world top psychiatrists, doctors, this. But, even the story I have in there is one of the strongest stories that I think will impact my entire life.
Okay. How long were you there?
I was only there 40 days.
40 days.
Yep.
Okay.
When you get older as adults, building real, authentic, close friendships are not as easy as your close friends that you have.
Sure.
And I went in there and I met this kid. He's the owner of Columbia Sportswear's son.
Wow.
This gothic kid. And I'm on day three in there. And I'm got, psychosis from the cocaine use. And I'm just this shy kid trying to figure out this treatment. And he was more kind of rough. got the kid, and I sat down and had lunch with him one time. Long story short, it's like 15 hours days in there. You got to be moving and grooving, meditation. Like, you can't miss or they'll kick you out. And the counselors and everyone pulled this kid aside. They're like, hey, we have to kick you out if you're not taking this serious. Like, what's gonna keep you here? And he goes, he told like the whole staff, he's like, this new Brett kid's cool. And Brett with this massive heart. That's why, like, my past, like, I don't regret it, because I've always loved people and I've always hurt myself, but like, I've always loved people.
Yeah.
So the second the staff came to me and told me the story, I'd wake up every morning at 4:50. I knew he liked his coffee black. I'd go get like a sobriety charm, and I'd put like a sobriety, like motivational charm in his black coffee next to his bed. I'd give him like a little like pump, like fist pump, wake him up and be like, hey bro, let's have a day today. So like, me and him built this bond that was the closest bond you could ever form as quickly as we formed it. And long story short, I met his family, had dinners and lunches with his family. Day 16, I go to wake him up, and he's dead in a puddle. He's in treatment, dead in a puddle of blood. And rock me.
What happened?
He overdosed.
No way.
So what happened was, it's pretty easy when you can look back and put stuff together. Day 15, the night before, he came to me and he goes, you were allowed once a week to go to Walmart on a bus. And he goes, hey, can you spare me $80 to get some groceries? And I'm like, of course. I went right to the ATM, got $80. And he had his girlfriend come. And instead of putting $80 towards Walmart, he used that $80 I gave him to get heroin. And he went on a bender that night in the facility. And I guess what happened was he overdosed, fell back, cracked his head on his bedpost. And I walk in and a complete room covered in blood. And this, yeah.
That is awful.
So now here I am. So it's like,
that set you back?
It set me back, and I think I weep for a week. Because it's like, God. It's probably the first time in my life I was sober so I could feel.
Yeah, yeah.
I had marijuana and substance to cope my mother and all my pain. Now I'm sitting in here fully sober, love this kid to death. He was my ride or die in treatment.
And your purpose there almost. Yep. He became your reason to wake up. And
Yep. And then this happened. So now I'm doing an FBI murder investigation while I'm trying to get my head on straight. While also coping with an amazing friend and the image of what I walked into and saw. So it was just like a week in treatment. That's why instead of like 30-ish days, it was 40 days.
Because
I needed like 7 to 10 days to...
Did they put blame on you?
No blame on me.
Okay, that was never...
And I actually like told the FBI in the room, like, how am I supposed to live? Like, I gave him that $80 for groceries, and they're like, Brett, we need you right now to stop. This was nothing. You had the best intent to help this kid go get groceries.
Right.
Like, don't live with this.
Oh my God.
So, but I mean, yeah.
That is...
It's easy to look back and be like, if I wouldn't have gave the 80...
Yeah.
But...
That's not where I expected that story to go.
No.
I thought you were going to say he was a lifelong friend.
Yeah. No, and it's like, the place is magical. The best place you could go. But in a selfish thing, I will say this. On my worst day now, I would never, ever, ever think to go back to a substance or this. And I don't do NA meetings. I don't do AA meetings. I don't do any of that. So I think whatever happened, I am fully healed. And I think seeing that was like, because I'm a stubborn mother effer. So it's like, I needed to see that to realize, if you go back again, that's you.
Sure, sure.
So it was like, very powerful to see, like, Brett's substance abuse is that.
Does Hazleton promote the AA program?
They do.
They do.
Yep.
And it's just something you didn't adopt.
They take you there. But, like, I'm a very good energy person. So, like, when you're in Hazleton, they'll make you go to meetings. And I went to them and it was okay. I get out. When I come back home, I come to Bloomington where my brother is. And I stay with him for a few months before I come back here. Mm-hmm. I went to one NA meeting, not AA. And it was just the worst energy people I've ever been around. God, and I walked out there, I'm dying. Like, yuck. I couldn't go back in that place ever again. Just hideous. Okay. Negative. Wow. I'm like, get me out of this terrible place.
Okay. So that that was not going to work for you.
No.
Okay. I see those groups in restaurants or at parks sometimes. I understand what you are saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now to their offense, I'll say this. It's like counseling or anything in life. You got to do your, it's like finding a church or finding a counselor. Sure. You don't just go to one and call it quits, Brett.
Or therapist. Yeah, 100%.
Yep. I could have put more work in and found better ones. There's a lot of close people who told me of good meetings. I just did that one and that was it.
Okay.
But when I say like 78% right now is the relapse rate in our country for addicts to relapse, on my worst day, 0% would I ever go back to a drink or smoke or anything.
But that, I mean, that's your brand. Like, you're extreme. You're one end or the other.
That's so true.
It's just, I mean, it's, your story is wild.
Oh, gosh.
So from then on, life is pretty good.
Yep.
But lacks balance.
Big time. Okay. And you said it perfectly.
You start your company up from the ground
again.
Same concept.
Yeah.
And why did you pick this concept? Why painting?
12 to 20, I was working for Ramshaw Real Estate. My uncle doing this type of stuff on his like apartments and condos.
Okay.
And I always knew like there's a need for a high-end, upscale, clean-cut, action-oriented people, because the trades is like, give me a cigarette and a negative attitude and bitching and moaning and wow, wow, wow. I'm like, watch this. Come in here clean-cut and just take over.
Okay.
So
that makes total sense.
I was sitting in bed at like 21 years old. I wanted to start a business and be an entrepreneur because I didn't want to work for somebody. I'm like, okay, what business can you start that doesn't take much money to start up, that's always going to be needed, that pays well, that people hate, that you know? I'm like, there it is. Done.
Wow. Okay.
So it started off just with that.
Okay. And Shaw Lux was born.
Shaw Lux was was, what am I, 28-ish? So it's still, again, for the few years, was still Shawsmere Painting and just paint.
Okay.
But what happened was, just having a heart and doing so much work in this community, I met so many contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I've never had a problem with is networking with people, because I have a good heart. I always take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I met amazing floor guys. I met amazing tile guys. I met the best countertop this. And every time I did, I know how to work. Like, treat people very good. When you first start to work with them, when they want a certain amount, pay them even more. So you're really wheeling these people in and like showing them, like, I'll take care of you.
Mm.
Then after a couple of years of getting back in the paint, Shaw Lux is born. And now we have flooring divisions, paint divisions, drywall divisions, every single division of basically the top people in the area.
I didn't know that.
Yep. So that's how it formed. Was just like, when I find really, really good-hearted people, but they were really damn good at what they did, I would go out of my way to build a relationship with them, get them an opportunity and a job, and pay them more and more and more, and show them, like, I'm going to appreciate you. I'm going to love you.
Yeah.
I'm going to change you and your family's life.
So are you, for all intents and purposes, like a one-stop shop?
Yep, that's what happened. So we were just paint, but then I'm like, as we kept building, I'm like, wait a second here. Like, you're in nice upscale homes. Families don't want to deal with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, when starting a business, you have to have a niche. My niche is, I'm going to be quality and speed. No one can come in and do the quality and the speed I am. So it's like, right now, why are we with 90 realtors and 30 designers?
Sure.
Because they know, call Brett, he can do anything, anytime.
Mm.
And that's kind of our thing.
Okay. And so for those 6 years, you said you were working, let me see, 120 hours a week.
Minimum.
Almost round the clock.
Literally around the clock. 7 to 7, I'm out in the field. Clientele, job sites, doing bids, meeting with the family to get the bid info, go home, hot shower, quick meal, and then in the office, 8:30 till 5-6 a.m. Yeah, just to go back to work.
Half because you want to be successful and half because you absolutely love it.
I love what I'm doing because I'm building like an empire to myself. I get to work with people. I love people. It's my way to serve and love people. I love my team. I'm surrounded by good people. And a couple things, like, I don't know balance, so I don't know how to slow, and I don't want the town to ever think of me as my past.
Yeah.
So this was a chance to be like, oh, wait, Brett's not a bad guy. Look what he built.
Yeah.
So,
because I don't know you for your past. I know you for Shaw Lux. You know what I mean?
yeah. And I feel like that's the whole community.
Yeah.
If I walk in Starbucks or I walk anywhere and people see me, the only thing said to me ever is like, man, your business looks like it's going good.
Yeah.
Man, you work all the time. I'm like, oh, gosh.
But the good part is you've almost erased that.
Amen. Yeah, yeah.
You've changed your reputation.
Yep. That's true.
So you ran yourself into the ground while building your business up to a huge peak.
Yep.
And over the last two years, you changed your perspective.
Yep.
Okay. Why'd you change it?
I think, you know, those 6 years of workaholic, my Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays were literally lock yourself in your home office. And when I say lock yourself in there, like, I'm just in there working from Friday night until Sunday.
God.
Nonstop with no sleep. And I think I just had a moment and I was like, is this like, could you go to rehab for this again?
Yeah.
Like, you're so isolated. Do you hang out with your family? do you have hobbies? Do you work out? Do you do anything healthy? Or do you just work? Like, yeah, what you love is, you know, like what you do is what you love. It's not work, but like, this is getting unhealthy. And I wasn't, what I thought would make me fulfilled and happy building a brand had me again kind of rock bottom. And I hit like a low point, nothing like severe. It was just more of like a heart to heart moment I had with myself. It's like, okay, we need to make some changes. We need to get your faith back, get into church, get around solid people, family, you know, your nieces and nephews, work out. So,
and this was just something you came to realize yourself.
Yep.
Just reflecting.
Yep. I was just having one of those night grinds again. And I just sat there.
Oh my God.
And I was like, man, you have been pretty isolated the last couple of years.
Did you wake up that next morning and everything changed, or is it gradual?
I got to see you church.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh man, like all my friends are here. All my clients are here. Like I walked in, like, and when you go, like the first time you're scared.
Yeah.
And I'm not a married guy. I'm a single guy. So like,
yeah.
And you have this concept, like at 35, I should be married with kids. So like you have Satan lying to you in your head about that and putting all the guilt. So you walk in, you want to sit in the back and
be
the, and I walk in, it was the complete opposite. It was almost like a God thing. Like I talked to everyone in the dang place. I knew everyone in there. Next thing you know, I'm helping with takedown. And I just like, I had this feeling.
Sure.
In the last 2 years, like the word that I said is fulfillment.
Yeah.
Because of balance. And it reminded me what that doctor said at Hazelden. When I walked out of his door, he said, the day you find balance is the day you win at life. And that's what I started chasing.
And now you have a social life. Now you have faith.
Yep.
Now you have philanthropy.
Yep.
All in one place.
A healthy routine.
Yeah.
I got my morning routine. Now my evenings, I'll turn off at 6 and I'll play some little games with my nieces and nephews.
Oh, that's sweet.
And get some good sleep now and value health. So it's like, it just like, and it's crazy. Like I'm, the business is even doing better.
That's what I was going to say. Did it affect it? Like you may have thought?
Yep. Like I thought like, if I'm not putting this much work in, is it going to go south? I won't be able to provide work for all these people. But the opposite effect.
Isn't that interesting?
You slow down, you take care of yourself, it's a happier and healthier you, everything goes better.
Wow.
So our team's amazing, work's going great, faith is good, hobbies, I'm making time for pickleball and working out and this and great things. So yeah.
There's one more thing you haven't touched on. Do you know what I'm gonna ask?
No idea.
Dating and love life.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
Apps? Do you put yourself out there?
So
No.
It's honest. Like, so honest is like losing my mother young, and having, I was a volunteer firefighter 6 years, 20 guys, a dad, two brothers, my guy friends. I've never really been around women. And if I'm being really honest, a lot of my past with women, it was more like clubs and hookups and stuff like that. So it's like, now that I'm living healthy, I want to find love. And I made it clear to all my closest people, like, my life is now a perfect balance. I want my person who I can go on trips with and come home to at night, but I'll never force it. And I think when you're living good, you can be picky.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, like, I went alone so long in my life. And there's books on this. Like, when you went alone, it's hard to bring someone in because you get so used to your own lifestyle.
Sure.
But I also just like, I trust the process
and
I have faith and I know like the right one will come.
Yeah.
So I've never been one. When you see some people like forcing relationships with all these problems, I'm just like, it's going to happen.
You're 35.
I'm getting up there.
You got time.
Yeah. And I think right now I'm healthier than I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
I feel 21. So.
And you just need to get someone who's still in her, you know, like childbearing years. So just go a little younger and you're set.
Absolutely.
But okay. No, so your heart is open.
100%.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
It's to the point now where it's like, I've been on a lot of trips the last couple of years to make up for my workaholic.
Yeah.
It's just to unwind and enjoy myself. Don't mind them. The last couple of trips I went on, I would tell my family, my friends, like,
oh, that's interesting.
I need my person.
Like, that's interesting.
Even now that I'm living like a good night routine and I'm turning off at 5 or 6, like I need my person to go out to dinners with and just come home and have cozy evenings with.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I want it. And there's nothing wrong with wanting it as long as you don't force it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yep.
Okay, can we just end with your day-to-day routine? Yeah. Are you the CEO? Are you the COO? Are you the owner? Are you all of it?
I'm the CEO.
Okay.
And I was doing every role.
Uh-huh.
So I was marketing, sales, project management, every component of it. because my whole life was trial and error. I didn't come from a family of business where I'm talking business all the time. So it's all been like figure out, learn, fall, learn. Jeez. So now I have my oldest brother's my CFO.
Oh, that's
nice. One of my closest friends has came in as my project sales manager and he's crushing it.
Mm.
Ben, who's here today, he runs my marketing and my social medias. He kills it.
He's who I call PR, public relations.
That's hilarious. And he does amazing at it. So it's just like, bring good people in, take care of them, and you build this family empire. Like, we don't call each other boss. We're a family.
Yeah.
So I put people in the right places. And like I said, the last couple of years, I've slowed down. If I told you my day-to-day 6 years ago, it'd make people vomit. And they'd be like, this guy's a monster. He's sickening. Get him off this microphone. Whereas now it's actually a healthy routine. Like,
more 8 to 5.
Yeah, like up at 6. And I got my insane morning health, like as far as like nutrition and supplements and a sauna and this and this. So you're already feeling good for the day.
Sure.
Like, this is the healthy Brett talking now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you already have like people that are doing their roles. So I'm not doing as many bids. So I'll go check on some jobs.
Okay.
I'll go do some bids. And then I'll meet back with my team and we can kind of go over some paperwork and stuff like that. I'll go do like a mid-morning workout. I'm not a 5 a.m. workout person.
Okay.
The people who are, God bless you.
That's what I would have guessed for you.
I need to get up and breathe.
Okay.
And I'm like 9 to 11 is when I'm like, I got the jobs going.
Interesting.
My mind's off. I'm like, let's go.
Wow.
So
when you come to a job site, are your employees excited to see you or do they fear you?
Love seeing me.
Really?
And if you asked me my job title, I wouldn't say president, boss, or CEO. I'm the vibe setter.
Really?
When I come with gifts. I come with coffee. I come with sandwiches. I come with fist bumps. It's like high energy because I want us all to like love what we do.
Yeah.
So it's just more like, let's have like my message Sunday nights and Monday mornings are just like, let's effing go. Like,
wow.
Come on. So I'm like the vibe setter.
You said you're more elevated and the employees are more elevated, clean cut, etc. Are you going to have smokers in the lawn? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And shitty trucks and all.
Yeah. Nope. And we formed more of like, I mean, you look back at Schossner Painting, you look at Mario Kart Brothers. I mean, the whole red, black, and blue vans. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, that's so funny.
But, you know, working with designers, you learn a lot too. So now we remodeled Shaw Lux. I like the name, black and gold, nice, bigger, clean vehicles. I mean, it says a lot about it. Your presentation matters.
I agree.
And one thing I'll say is like when I was younger and I'd hire employees, I would hire people with experience. And with that came, I can't be taught, shitty attitudes, bad habits, bad energy in the company. And one day my father was like, when my mother passed away, me and my dad would go to El Toro on Friday nights to try to make amends and just get close.
Yeah.
And there was a guy named Luis who served us every Friday, the hardest worker and the best heart. Long story short, he was like, why don't you stop with hiring people who are like experienced and just hire good people?
Because
you know what to do and then train them.
Yes.
And in life, good people hang with good people. I brought Luis in and he's been with me now 6 years and he has brought in over 30 people to us and they're all the same. Good hearts, hard workers.
Wow.
So when I say we do not have a bad vibe one day of the year, we don't have a bad day.
Wow.
It is just like high on life every day because we're all just the same type.
Yeah.
So it was like, that was one of the best lessons I learned in business.
Vibe setter.
Yeah.
I love it. Do you think I didn't ask you anything? Do you think we covered it all?
Impressively, we covered it all. You are really good at this.
What do you think? You think we covered it all?
I was driving here. I'm like, where do we start? How do we do this? What are we talking about in a short period of time? But you know what you're doing. Impressive.
Guess how long we've been going.
Oh, geez. Hour
3 minutes.
Let's go. Oh, I would have thought this would have been a 24 hour to let this out.
Brett, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to get to know the guy behind the social media posts, honestly.
I appreciate it so much, and thank you so much for having me.
This was just awesome. Yeah, you have a big heart, and I can tell, and it was just a real pleasure.
Yes, and honestly, like after listening to your podcast, I was stoked to come on here.
Oh, well, I'm excited.
You have an amazing thing going.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, where can people find you? Should we tell them that?
Find us, I mean, Shaw Lux, anything. Okay. So Instagram, Facebook, Shaw Lux, or just Brett Shaw on Facebook, whatever. So
okay,
we're pretty loud and active on social media, so that's a good starting point.
Yes, you have great social media presence, and you Brett, one T.
Two T's,
yep. Brett.
Correct, yep.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yep, thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for listening. However your podcast host of choice allows, please positively rate, review, comment, and give all the stars.
Don't forget to follow, subscribe, share, and ring that notification bell so you know when the next episode drops. Also, search and follow Hyperlocal CU on all social media. If I forgot anything or you need me, visit my website at hyperlocalcu.com. Bye!